Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi, I'm Kirsten.
And I'm Maggie.
And this is Mess Magnet. Woo! On YouTube. Yay. So for anyone listening to the podcast version right now, you can just scoot over to the Rob Has a Podcast YouTube and you can see our faces while we discuss everything the Tortured Poets Department, Taylor Swift's newest album. That's what we're here to talk about today. So non-Swifties, I'm sorry. She is the monoculture and Sasha's not here this week to stop me. So this is what we're doing.
I'm so excited. Thank you so much for inviting me on. You know that I am like such a Swiftie, so I'm ready to get into all of it.
Yes, and you joined us last year? Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. When Midnights was released, which I can't believe That's only been like
A year and a half ago.
That's wild. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, obviously Maggie's our Swiftie correspondent. So,
oh my God, I'm like here. Never been so honored. I really, really love it. I have such strong feelings about her that are like, I do think slightly off the beaten path of regular Swifties.
Okay.
So
I'm not like regular Swifties.
No, I mean, I would never say that. Like, the actual Swifties who, I think no more than I do, but I just feel a great kinship to her from like an artist perspective.
Yes. And that's a good thing to bring because I am not an artist like that. So I don't have that same perspective. And we also just have like general differing beliefs on a lot of things about Taylor Swift, which is also good to have. If we agreed about everything, it wouldn't necessarily be that fun to talk about.
Definitely.
And so I'm really glad you're here. Afterwards, I was like, oh, should I have invited like more people to talk about? Like, there's so many people who love Taylor Swift in the RGP family. And I was like, oh, should I have asked like all these other people to join? And then I was like, no, it's Mess Magnets. It's fine. should we just jump into it?
Yes, I'm ready. And I'm sure that the conversation will take us in many different places, but I'm so ready.
Yes. So overall, the Tortured Poets Department came out on Friday. What was your first impression? What's your overall thoughts of the album?
Okay, so I just started working a 9-to-5 job. So I could not stay up till midnight to listen. And I'm very glad I didn't, because then I apparently would have been up until basically 3:30 in the morning listening to all of it with the double album. And I listened to all of it like through my work day on Friday. And I have a lot of thoughts in general. Okay. I think that I have been like a Taylor Swift fan since I was, you know, eighth grade. Like, loved her. I remember, I think maybe when I was on for minutes, I told the story. Like, I remember laying in my parents' bed, scrolling through the channels and stopping on the CMT network to watch the video of her singing Teardrops on My Guitar in the green dress and being like, who is that beautiful girl? Like, I want to be her.
You were there day one.
Literally, like, I loved her so much. And this album to me is really, really giving me like Speak Now vibes, really giving me Red vibes. But I think honestly a little bit more Speak Now. It really feels like this is a return to the writing on her bedroom floor situation. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of criticism, rightfully so. You know, I don't disagree with the criticism that it all sort of sounds similar and like people wish that she would have pushed herself a little bit more. But I have thoughts on that in the context that she went on the biggest world tour like that maybe has ever happened, right? Like the,
it's not even over yet, baby.
Exactly. Like there's a whole other leg. She was out there for 3.5 hours a night performing essentially her entire catalog with precision, clean, you know, never skipping a beat, performed entire, like 3 hours in the rain for people watching her show. Like she was performing at the highest level of a pop star, right? So I absolutely understand why she wrote all of these songs and maybe didn't spend all of the time necessary to like clean it up or edit it down and just sort of like emotionally vomited out these songs and was like, okay, go. You know, like she put all polish into the tour and she was doing this simultaneously. So I feel like in the context of where she's at as an artist, there's so much. I feel like any artist in the world dreams of being at a place where they can just sort of do the art that they want, put it out, and let it be what it is. And she has climbed to the top of the mountain and is at the top of the music industry in so many levels that she's, in my opinion, earned the right to maybe not produce the best album that she's ever made in terms of like how edited down it is, how much she's pushing herself musically, how much she's even pushing herself lyrically, how much she's exploring these emotions rather than just saying the way that she feels. But I do feel like she earned that right by everything else that she's been doing. And I'm really happy that this is what she gave us, because let me tell you, even everybody's least favorite Taylor Swift album is still a great album, in my opinion. And I'm not saying that this is the least favorite, but like, this is a great album. You know, maybe not one of her, my favorites, or I personally think one of her best, but it's a great album.
Yeah, I think that a lot of the lack of like editing down and stuff, I don't even know if I'd put it to being so busy and whatever. I think it comes from with the Taylor's versions that she released, all these songs came out of the vault. And listen, did they all have to come out of the vault, right? They didn't. Like, there's probably like 1 to 2 really great vault songs on every album, right? And it's like, that kind of makes it worth getting all the other vault songs that you maybe don't like as much or you don't really listen to.
Yeah.
In my opinion, like getting like, Is It Over Now is worth the not so good ones. And I am talking about You Slut. I didn't like that song. Not I didn't like you a slut either.
And I do think Is It Over Now is going to be my number one most played song on Spotify this year. And it is only April. So
I love that for you. I love it. But I do think that by like releasing all these vault songs and everyone getting so obsessed with them, it's like the spectacle of Taylor Swift has grown to be so much more than what she is as an artist or as a person or as a performer, that it's almost like she has to keep upping the ante and doing all this nonsense with like a double album at 2 a.m. Because she needs to keep that, you know, that spectacle alive is kind of the vibe. Even though I'm on the West Coast and I could have started listening at 9 p.m., I listened to like the first two songs and then went to bed because I am a sleepy girl and I listen to them in the morning. But I do think that something that the Torture Poets Department has that might be like above some of Taylor's other albums is it is a really great album to listen to while you work an office job all day. Like you are not really gonna get too distracted by like more than a couple of songs, and it just kind of flows, and all of a sudden you look up and it's lunchtime and you've done all this work and listen to that. Like I do really like it for listening while working.
That's so a great point. I'll have to try that sometime this week. I'll have to put in my headphones and listen to the whole thing front to back. I have a couple of Swiftie friends as well.
Yes.
And my best friend, Lincoln, not to tell his business, but he really loves Folklore and Evermore. He doesn't like Midnights as much. Like he's much more, you know, the Aaron Dessner Swiftie of it all. And I asked him what he thought of the album. And he was like, my biggest issue with it is that it's just very dense. Like I think that she is, it's so about the lyrics that the music gets kind of lost. And I think that that's sort of what you're saying, Kirsten, like the music gets kind of lost so you can do it when you're doing your office job, you know? But I also think, you know, and we'll talk about this more throughout the podcast, but like everything that she said about this album is she said, like, I had to make this, like, this was really, really important for me to produce and put out there. And I think that there really is something to that in terms of how lyrically dense it is, how emotionally raw it is. Like, it's very raw. I feel like I read her diary kind of when it was over.
And like, sometimes in a good way and sometimes in a bad way. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes I'm like, how do you need to know all that?
Yeah, I think also, like, should we talk about our favorite songs and our least favorite songs, or should we save that?
Let's talk about our favorite and least favorite songs.
Okay. So my favorite song on the whole album is The Black Dog.
A good choice. Excellent choice.
I really, really love that one. Because in my opinion, I love that one. I really love So Long London as well. And I think it's because both of those songs, in my opinion, are less her describing her pain and more her talking about this complex emotion that she has that is like, I just feel like there's more emotions to the song, those two songs in particular, rather than like, oh my God, I really like this guy, or oh my God, screw this guy, or I'm so sad, I'm down bad, I'm crying at the gym. You know, like, I feel like both of those songs are incredibly layered. And specifically with The Black Dog, I just feel like she went into my brain and like picked out the way that I feel and wrote it down and put it in musical form and gave it to me. Like, it's just so relatable to have too much access to somebody that you shouldn't have access to anymore and have all of these things flooding your head. Like, do you not miss me? Are you kidding me? Who are you there with? Like, you're coming up with all of these scenarios. And then also at one point realizing you're being too dramatic. So you're like, well, you know what? I just hope you have a shitty time. I don't want to think about this anymore. So I just hope you have a shitty time. I hope you have a terrible time. Goodbye.
Okay. I really like The Black Dog too. It's not my favorite, but I relate to it a little bit. And I think that this is something I think of, like, okay, I feel like Taylor Swift in relationships is so wifey, you know, like she is wifey. And I don't need to say anything more than that. The people who get it. And the people that don't. But here's the thing. I'm wifey. And I feel like you're wifey too. Yeah. So I feel like you get it from that way where it's like, even when, if you're dating someone and it's more of like a situationship or it's not that serious or whatever, I feel like and this is me totally imprinting on Taylor Swift, being like totally toxic and weird.
Are you kidding?
Like, I feel like it's the type of vibe where like you're in it with something, someone with something that's like not that serious, and that person will be like, oh my God, like, why did I have to meet someone like you right now? Because, oh my God, you're so amazing and blah, 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 blah. But then like, oh, here's all the reasons why it's just like going to be another bullshit experience. Right. Uh-huh. And so I feel like that's kind of the vibe that Black Dog gives me. And I feel like I could see that also happening to you, unfortunately, because you're wifey.
Well, I just think that, like, I'm going to be honest. I had a hard time relating to parts of this album, which like is crazy, right? Because she's just writing about heartbreak and like everybody's had their heart broken. And
this one was weird. This one was different.
Yeah, it really, there were songs that I was like, oh, what's going on? Like and that's why maybe So Long London and The Black Dog resonated with me, because I was like, okay, I can tap into this. Like, I have felt this before personally. I know exactly what I'm following her. How about that? Like, her storytelling is crafted in this way that I am following this journey. And even if I haven't felt this exact thing, you know, like So Long London, she talks about leaving her friends behind for this person, doing all of the, like, there were lyrics in that I had a friend text me and be like, oh my gosh, this lyric I loved because X, Y, and Z. And I couldn't personally relate to it, but I followed the story. And there were just some songs that I was like, I don't know that there is a narrative here other than like, how could you do this to me? You know?
Yes. I do get that. I can't remember which song it's on right now. I think it might be So Long, London. I don't know. It's also a very difficult album to like learn the lyrics to, because there's so many. Uh-huh. But there's one where she talks about like feeling sorry that she gave away all this youth for free.
Yeah, that's So Long,
London. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that it's just like, I'm like, heard that. Uh-huh. I think my favorite song through the first couple of listens, and like this is going to change, and it's going to change like 100 times. But I think my first inclination for a favorite song was The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived. I just really like the way it sounds. I get the message. I understand what's happening. I like it a lot. Do you have a least favorite song?
No, because I probably couldn't even say the name of it. It's just, I think my least favorites are the ones that just kind of run together, you know, that I'm having a hard time distinguishing from the other ones.
Like, I'm looking through the track listing for the anthology to be like, what's my least favorite? And I'm like, well, like, I guess it's Robin, because I don't remember there being a song called Robin and I couldn't tell you what song it is. Like, I guess it's that one, but I probably don't hate it. I just don't know it yet.
Exactly. I can't imagine that there's going to be like, I hate very few Taylor songs. Like, I really, even the ones that aren't my favorite, I'm like, they're not like automatic skips always, you know, sometimes I just am not in the mood. Mm-hmm. But I think that this also happens to me. Like, I'm not going to act like I'm this amazing music person who know, like, a lot of the times when I listen to an album the first time through, all the songs kind of sound the same to me, because if you've created a cohesive album, it's like a collection of songs that live in the same universe. So I imagine that through the next couple of months of listening, I will be able to distinguish, especially those back half songs, much easier from one another. Yes. But yeah, and I did not love the Tortured Poets Department, the title track.
Okay, I felt that way on the first listen, but then when I was listening today, after I listened to it like all day Friday and Monday and Tuesday, I was like, oh, I'm kind of into it now. So like, it could come back around. And all I can think back to is like, I remember this so viscerally. I remember the day Reputation was released and I was so excited, and I hadn't like loved Look What You Made Me Do, but like I was in it. I was ready. And I listened to like 15 seconds of every song and skipped them all and was like, I don't like this album. And then just like didn't go back to it for years and years. And then when I went back to it, I was like, huh? Well, like, what was I thinking? Like, what was 2017 me thinking? Like, this album is riddled with bops, and it's probably one of my top Taylor albums now. So, like, you never know how things are going to grow and change the more you listen to it.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, people are used to certain sounds and certain stories from an artist in general, like especially a musical artist and especially someone like her. And I do think like the critique that this felt like more of the same, like I do understand that, but I also do think it's kind of untrue. I think this is a very different album than anything that she's really ever done. I just think that like I said, I think it's just way denser because she hasn't had as much artistic freedom to just do what she wants to do. And like I said at the top of this, I think that maybe she made all of the exact correct artistic choices in this? No. But like, so what? She did a gigantic, she did the tour. She's been doing all of these re-recordings. She very clearly was feeling isolated and alone and so sad and wanted to write music with her friends because this is her therapy. Like, and this is what we got. And yes, like you said, Kirsten, some of it you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're putting this out here to the public. Like
I do think she should go to real therapy. I think it was in the Time interview for Person of the Year where she said like, oh, I've never been to therapy. I feel very sane. And I'm like, girl.
Well,
we all need therapy, but like you're in such an exceptional situation. Like you got to have someone to talk to about it that's like certified.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine being her and walking outside of her door and having like even photos of her and Travis at Coachella where it was a wall of phones. I was like, oh my gosh, that's giving me anxiety just looking at it. Like it's so, but yeah, I mean, I do really like the album. Like I finished it and was like, I love this. I will not argue with somebody who comes up and says, I don't like it because of like, you know, the reasons that we just laid out. I would be like, okay, you know, that's absolutely, like, I understand what you're saying. But I was affected by it and I probably will continue to be affected by it, especially the next couple of years. Yeah. Like you said, going back to it through other heartbreaks and, you know, other moments in my life, I'm sure that I'll go back to it and be like, why did I not love Peter when it came out the first time? And it's like, well, you know.
Well, because it just didn't apply to you like that. And exactly. That's the other thing too. My biggest complaint with society as a whole right now is that everybody has lost the ability to act normal. It's really, like lately, it's really been irritating me because you'll see people saying things and acting in ways and it's like, what happened? We used to be a society. Yep. And like, I don't understand. And so I feel like we've gotten to a point, and it's not just with Taylor Swift, it's with like everyone, where stan culture is so out of control, where even if you are like a big fan of something, like I'm a Swiftie.
Me too.
It's like, oh, well, you can't say anything critical about anything Taylor's ever done or any music she's ever released, or you're a hater and like you hate women. Like I made a tweet on Friday that was like, someone really needs to like tell her no sometimes. Cause I think she's moved past the point where people ever tell her no. And people are like, wow, I guess you're a woman hater. I'm like, huh? Okay. That's where we're at.
Well, I actually think that like she tells herself no all the time. I think that that's like, no, I'm serious. Like, I think that that is, she's incredibly self-editing. She's incredibly like, she is in the relentless pursuit of writing top-notch songs. Mm-hmm. Like always, I feel like that's why her songwriting is as good as it is. Like she pushes herself to work in a specific way. And I think that in this situation, she truly was just writing her soul, like bearing her soul, and just decided that like, I'm at a point where I don't have to worry about charting right now. I don't have to worry about, you know, like, is this all going to go away? Like, I'm going to do a whole other leg of this tour. I can just put out this thing that is meaningful to me. And I don't, it doesn't have to be the most boundary pushing, unbelievable, you know, like it can just be something I want to do. And I think that that's such an amazing place as an artist to be in, like a really beautiful, you know, art expanding thing to do.
And it is beautiful. But then you think about the other artists who are also at the top of the game who don't have that, you know, privilege, which is unfortunate, right? So I don't know, but it's fine. Anyways, what I'm trying to say is you can love something and still have valid criticisms of that thing because nothing in this world is perfect. And can we, I beg, I know I don't have to tell the messengers this, but can we please just act normal for once in our lives?
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, let's go back to the period in time before this album even existed. Let's talk about all the stuff that, well, not all the stuff, because as everyone listening to this podcast knows, and you know, the Swifties be theorizing, and they will cling to like the smallest shred of anything and create like the wildest murder board of a theory you've ever seen in your life. So like, we can't do all of it, but pre-release, so obviously she announced the album while she was accepting her Grammy award this year. I can't remember which, she won two Grammys. I can't even remember which one it was for. I think it was
Pop Vocal Album and Album of the Year.
It was during Pop Vocal Album because she didn't think she was going to win Album of the Year. So they really took, they gave her 13th and 14th Grammys together, so she couldn't just like be happy with 13. That's crazy. But so she announced it at the Grammys. We talked about that when it happened. And then shortly after, in February, when she was performing in Melbourne, she said on stage, "I needed to make it. It was really a lifeline for me. It sort of reminded me why songwriting gets me through life. I've never had an album where I needed songwriting more than I needed it on Tortured Poet." So that kind of sets the stage.
Yes.
As well, in February, the full track list of, well, the first half of Tortured Poet's Department was released way earlier than Taylor's ever released a full track list, including features. And it was definitely because someone accurately leaked it on TikTok. So someone for sure lost their job over that one.
Well, also, the thing that's so funny is, like, I'm such a Swiftie, and I'm so grateful to the other Swifties who like do the work to do the theories and like all of, because I don't really have time for that. Like I just, like I said, I'm working this 9-to-5 job. Like I can't, you know, be looking for all these Easter eggs all over the country. But somebody,
well, I'm certainly not seeing them where there are none.
Yeah. Well, she would post on her Instagram story these song titles that then I would go back to like the track list that she released and be like, well, this song's not even on there. Like, what is she talking about? Or like, I was so confused. And she was releasing the title or the title of the tracks for the second album and right under our noses.
Yeah. And she also like every couple of shows on the like Asia and Australia leg of the Eras Tour, she'd be like, oh, and also here's a new edition of the album with this new song. And mm-hmm. it's enough. Just mm-hmm. listen, tell me when the album's out and I'll listen to it. Because yeah. I get my, like, there's this one particular TikToker where every time I see his face, I know I'm about to hear the most unhinged stuff I've ever heard in my life, and I'm going to believe it all.
Yeah.
So I know when I see him what's going to happen. So I'll just wait mm-hmm. for him to break it down. Another thing that happened on TikTok, and I don't actually know if this is real. I had a lot of trouble verifying if this was a real video or AI or what. But mm-hmm. basically, there's a video that a TikToker posted where they had seen Joe and Taylor in a restaurant together. And it looks like Joe is like pointing at her and saying, you don't get to tell me about sad. I don't know if it's real or not. But I saw the TikTok and I couldn't verify if it was true or not. So take it with a huge grain of salt.
I also have to say that, you know, we all thought this album was going to be all about Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And it appears there are not many songs at all about Joe. And they're much nicer than the other songs on the album.
Yeah. Exactly. Basically, the vibe I'm getting from online is like Taylor has called Joe broke, and she's called Joe inattentive, and she's called Joe like depressed. And uh-huh. that's basically the extent of it. Meanwhile, I'm pretty sure the manuscript is yet another song about Jake Gyllenhaal. So like we know which men have been the worst to her. And yeah, I don't think Joe's one of them.
You know, and I think that that's why maybe those songs that are like clearly about Joe did interest me more, because I do think that those emotions are much more difficult to express. Like, what's the lyric that she has in Evermore? Like, a good man hurts you and you know you hurt him too. Like, mm-hmm. I think that there's so much complexity to that relationship and why it ended. And it appears, based off of what she's told us through song, that like it did need to end, but it seems like it ended with more of like a whimper than with like a big crash and burn.
And that makes sense with like it's a 6-year relationship. Uh-huh. I've had a 7-year relationship in the past. When okay. something that long-term ends, it's kind of over like a long time before mm-hmm. someone finally pulls the plug and is like, it's over. Like, nothing built for that long breaks in one day.
Yeah.
Even if someone had done something so horrible that mm-hmm. it's like you can't move past it, that doesn't happen in one day, and it doesn't end like in one go, because there's this total sunk cost fallacy, as well yeah. as just the complexity of two people who build their lives together and live together mm-hmm. and are planning towards a future together, where when it doesn't happen the way you thought it would happen or what you expected mm-hmm. doesn't happen, like it's difficult to parse out.
And I think that that's maybe why, like I said, the storytelling in those songs is intrigued me more, because I was like, she may personally feel like the chapter is closed, but I do think like it's less cut and dry what went on there, mm-hmm. which is why those songs to me, I'm like, oh, like what do you like? There's resentment, but also sadness, but also like clearly a lot of care still being given there. Like, that to me is where her songwriting on the album shines versus the songs where she's just like, screw you forever, you know?
Yes, 100%. And so I guess like continuing to speak about Joe and everything. Mm-hmm. So before the album came out, early last week, she released a bunch of exclusive playlists of her own music on mm-hmm. Apple Music.
Mm-hmm.
The playlists are called You Don't Get to Tell Me About Sad, mm-hmm. I Can Do It With a Broken Heart, Am I Allowed to Cry, I Love You, It's Ruining My Life, and Old Habits Die Screaming. The playlists correspond with the 5 stages of grief: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And she did like a little like voice memo intro to all of them. And it's just, it's recontextualized some of past albums. And I think that the Tortured Poets Department as a whole recontextualizes a lot of her past songs that we maybe thought were one thing, but might be something else. Mm-hmm. But in particular, it rebrands some of the previous love songs as denial and delusional. For example, the song Lover mm-hmm. is on I Love You, It's Ruining My Life, which is like, damn, a blow to the Lover girlies.
So I'm going to be honest. Like, okay. Like, all right, Taylor. Like, these
but
are.
I also,
you know, when you, like, she has said herself that the way that fans interact with songs change meanings of when she wrote them. Like, the way that she views them now are so different. And, like, mm-hmm. clearly she went through this very traumatic period, traumatic, tumultuous period of time. She may be angry at people that she wrote these songs previously about. You know, like, her feelings about the situations may have changed. But, like, that it's the same thing as, like, when an author writes a book and then comes out later and yeah. is like, actually, you know, the two people who I put together, who everybody loves together, I don't think that I should have done that. And that was dumb. Like, and everybody's like, are you kidding? Like, I think, let it be. Well, I think it's just like the art belongs to the people who are consuming it at that point. Like, once you put it into the world to be consumed. And I think that, like, I bet you she would probably agree with this statement. Honestly, like, I don't think that, like, she's always been the type of person who's like, it means what you want it to mean, you know, like, don't go through, like, yeah, it's fun to go through and, like, figure out who it's about. But, like, it's a story that I'm telling, you know.
Mm-hmm. So, the other thing, too, is, like, if you look back, like, Reputation and Lover are kind of together.
Mm-hmm.
And Lover is like Reputation is full of love songs. It's really not like this actually like that angry of an album. Like, it's very, mm-hmm. very much full of love songs. And Lover, a lot of those songs seem to be already mourning the muse from Reputation. So I also think that, like, we don't even necessarily know if that means it's about Joe or what. Like, it just is yeah. like, and Lover is like a song riddled with anxiety. Like, can mm-hmm. I go where you go? Like, mm-hmm. I want all your summer. Like, okay, like, it's fine. We don't have to do this.
Yeah. And also, like, I think that the thing for me that made me be like, okay, you know, I think that I'm just going to have to agree to disagree with Miss Taylor here on these is, like, Sweet Nothing was on her denial playlist. And that song, like, I really love that song. I think that's one of the most, like, beautifully romantic songs she's ever written. But, you know, I think a lot of people could interpret that as, like, she's saying all they've ever wanted from me is nothing. Like, I think for a lot of people, that's not something that they would want. But, like, I took that song to mean something differently. And, like, it's, like I said, very meaningful to me, incredibly romantic. And I was just like, okay, you know, if that's the way that she maybe views the song or thought conceptually, it would be a cool thing to do to make these mm-hmm. lists and sort, you know what I mean? Like, who knows if that means that she was like, yeah, and this I clearly wrote when I was in denial. Like, she could just be like, ooh, this is a cool concept.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know,
exactly. 100%. And, like, listen, that she might have a lyric saying she doesn't want money on this album, but she does. And she is making money by doing these partnerships with Spotify and Apple Music, mm-hmm. including all of the little pop-ups she did, mm-hmm. like at the Grove and all of the billboards with the QR codes mm-hmm. just before the album came out of, like, it literally, like, you know, in middle school when you have a project to, like, write a letter from the past and it's like, oh, I'm going to, like, stain the paper with tea and, like, burn the edges with, like, uh-huh. with a lighter to make it look old. It's like, it was that, but with the yeah. Spotify logo on the bottom. And I saw mm-hmm. someone, like, making a joke about it, like, wow, like, this is, like, your queen. And I was like, part of loving Taylor is that she's cringe. She is cringe. Yeah, and she is free. Okay.
What do you mean? Is this my queen? Don't act like you haven't been there. Okay. Like, if you are shocked by Taylor doing this, you don't know Taylor at all. You don't. You know?
Oh my God. Exactly. It's just like, it's fine if you think it's cringe and you don't like it, but it's like, that just means that you are not a Taylor Swift fan on any level, because a big part of it is being like, yeah, this is embarrassing, but it's fine.
But it's also like, she's living out her fantasy and it's fun, you know, whatever.
Exactly. Okay, that's all I put for the pre-release, because, like, that doesn't really matter that much. So let's get into post-release stuff.
Okay.
So, obviously, she surprised everyone with the anthology version at 2 a.m., the double album. It was heavily theorized that it would be a double album at 2 a.m., because there was a bunch of photos leading up to this where it was Taylor and various associates putting up, like, peace signs and the number... obviously number two. So people knew 2 a.m. something was going to happen. They were primed for it after Midnight's had the 3 a.m. version with additional tracks. I don't think it was like that surprising at all. It was heavily theorized. And she will do anything before she releases Reputation, Taylor's version. I don't know why, but she will. She'll never give it to us.
I saw a theory online being like, it's starting to feel like 1989 Taylor time again, where like she was getting overexposed and people were like, yeah, and she's waiting until it's peak that to re-release Reputation.
That's just so ridiculous. I've seen that theory a few times as well, but it's like, Taylor has been on the record so many times about how miserable it was with like Snake Gate and like she literally hid in a suitcase to go in and out of her house for like a year. Like, she hated it. It was like the most, she's still writing songs about it on this album, right? Like, she hated it. She would never, some people are saying she's purposefully doing this to get back to that. It's like, she would never do that. Nobody would do that. Like, that is not a way human beings behave. And I also just think, like, it's very clear she does care a lot what people think, even though she tries to say that she doesn't. It's like, well, there's
it's all over her music. You know,
it's exactly like she it's in the songs, right? So it's just like, I don't believe that that's the case. But I also didn't believe that she would release a new album before she finished the Eras tour. So
me either. I was wrong. Shook by that, like completely shook. I
like, is the playlist gonna change before I see it in November?
I have no idea, Kirsten. I'm so excited to see though.
Yeah, I can't wait till she heads to Europe, which is happening very soon, so that we can see like the videos of all the surprise songs and also see if the playlist in general shifts and changes. So that'll be pretty cool. They also added all of the songs from the Tortured Poets Department got added to the Apple Music playlist that we just talked about. That's kind of interesting. The only thing I really wrote that was notable is that the song I Can Do It With a Broken Heart is not on the playlist I Can Do It With a Broken Heart. It's on the I Love You, It's Ruining My Life playlist, which is just like, seems weird to me personally, but okay.
Maybe she thought that like the lyric itself is different than like the vibe of the whole song.
I mean... is it? But maybe. Okay. The other thing too is, so I've taken down, there's so many Easter eggs throughout all of the lyrics. There's so much lore to this that like, I do think it's an album that someone who is more established as a Swiftie in the online space might enjoy more than someone who isn't, because there's just so many more things to catch. And there are so many references to the 1975 throughout the album as well that I just didn't even write down because I don't care to, because I hate Maddie Healy's guts.
Okay, I also have to say this. Like, I am going to be honest, everybody. I don't listen to the 1975. I don't care about Maddie Healy at all. I personally don't see what Taylor and all of his adoring fans, he has so many adoring fans. Like, I personally don't see it. And I don't care enough. Like, I'm now a 28-year-old woman. I don't care enough to, like, go in and learn all the 1975. Like, no. I don't, you know.
The thing too is, it's like, after finding out all of the absolutely horrendous things he said and done over the years, it's like, well, now I don't care to go back and learn anything. Like, there was one of the 1975 songs was like a viral TikTok sound last year. And I was like, oh, this is a good song. Maybe I'll look it up. I saw it was by the 1975. And I was like, no, I'm not contributing to them getting a penny because he's a bad person. So that's my personal opinion.
Yeah, I don't even know enough about him.
Oh, there's it's disgusting, Maggie. Like, some of the things that came out last year are just so truly horrendous that it's like, I don't want to spend the time to get to know this man or his discography. Yeah, and so you're in the right space not doing
it. I think that that's also like when, I don't know, when the fling was happening, I was like, this is Taylor, you know, like, we've been here before, we, you know, so I wasn't like,
yes. And it is,
it's
so on brand for a young woman to get out of a long-term relationship and then just date like the worst man you've ever seen. Like, it just, it happens. Well, it's fine.
I also have to say that like this album recontextualizes so much of like
everything. Oh,
like, there's stuff from like folklore that I was like, what? Like, there's like a theory going around that her and Joe were sort of on and off, you know?
Yes. Like, and I think that it's not like confirmed, but I feel like it's as close to confirmed as it can get.
Based off the songwriting and the time and the albums that the songs are on, I feel like we can only be like, okay, so there was clearly like a little bit of back and forth. And, you know, like maybe when her and Joe were off, she was seeing Maddie on the side a little bit here and there, you know, like, I don't know. I guess I can't. I don't know. I guess it's just the idea of, I did like the song. I Can Fix Him. No, Really, I Can.
It's one of my top faves.
I did like that song because while I wasn't sure that the storytelling that she told in a lot of the rest of the album was compelling enough for me to like go along the journey with her of like liking this tortured man, I think the story that she told of like, no, you just don't understand him like I do. And like, I'm not concerned about the things that you're concerned about because like you, they're not even relevant to me, you know? And I think maybe that's as we're talking this out, I'm like also working out my feelings about the album. Like, I think maybe I have trouble going along the journey of her being like, and he was so sad and so cool and it wasn't that amazing and crazy, because I'm like, I don't know that that is.
It's but the thing is, you have to think Maddie Healy might just have it like that, because most of this album seems to be about him, and Halsey wrote a whole album about him as well. So like, we don't know his influence. Maybe he smells incredible. I don't know.
I it's not even about him though. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. Like, the storytelling that she was giving, sometimes I just had trouble like going into it with her because I was like, and what else about him?
Exactly, right? One thing that I think is wild, the most wild lyric on the whole thing, is so in But Daddy I Love Him, Taylor has a moment where she says, I'm having his baby. No, I'm not, but you should have seen your faces. And I think that is so cuckoo to be like part of this album at all, because like, not that long ago, in December, Tree Payne, Taylor's publicist, went out and like was fighting Dumois on Maine for saying that Taylor had been secretly married or that there was a miscarriage in Taylor's like.
It was so I'm just like, it was only the secretly married.
There was miscarriage stuff in there too, and
well,
that's when
Dumois did say some miscarriage stuff. They did not specify whether or not it was Taylor's or not. They said that the song Bigger Than the Whole Sky was written about a miscarriage.
Yeah, which like, I mean, maybe, but we don't know. But basically like, to get so upset about Because like Dumont has been saying the secretly married stuff for like over a year and no one said anything. It wasn't until the Bigger Than the Whole Sky miscarriage connection was posted about the tree pain went on main. So like
I don't
you can
remember,
kind of draw the lines. But I think it's crazy to have a lyric joking about like a pregnancy.
I think that whole song though is
I can't listen to that song, so I can't have a theory on it. I cry every time.
Really?
Oh, yeah, I can't listen to it. It's like that one and like Soon You'll Get Better are the only two guaranteed skips I've got.
But Daddy, I Love Him?
Oh, no, But Daddy, I Love Him, I like.
That's the, oh,
I thought you were talking about Bigger Than the Whole
Sky. I see. I'm so sorry.
My
I thought we were talking about But Daddy, I Love Him because I think like this lyric, I'm having his baby, no, I'm not, but you should have seen your faces, like, I love the story that she's telling in this song. Like, there's a lot on this album. Like, she's mad at the fans. Like, she does not like the way that they reacted to the Maddie stuff, the crap that they gave him. Like, even
– but, like, also, I'm sorry, too bad. Like, she's like, it's my good name to tarnish. Oh, it's, like, not your business what I do, and the wine moms are still holding out. I'm sorry. Tough luck. You're a public figure. People are going to speculate and you should just let it lie because you're not going to stop them from speculating. Like, it's fine that you're upset. I wouldn't love it either, but it's like, you can't put your whole life on stage and then think that people aren't going to have a reaction to it. Right?
Sure. I do think like there's a difference between people reacting and people writing like open letters to her asking her to not let them down and like to break up with her boyfriend.
That was weird. But Maddie Healy should have like not gone on podcasts and talked about the porn he was watching and like made racist comments about people. And maybe it would not have caused that sort of reaction.
Look, I don't care about Maddie Healy.
I've never learned one thing about Maddie Healy consensually.
I think that, though, like, I'm really interested in her exploring that in the album because it's something that she's never said before, ever, publicly, that, like, as she's never once said anything negative about her fans.
The closest I can get is in Miss Americana when she's like, this is my front yard and there's a ton of fans there. And she's like, I'm highly aware that this is not normal. Uh-huh. And that's the closest to being mean to the fans she's ever been.
And I think that like her saying, you know, but Daddy, I love him, and having that be the lyric in the song, because like that's what you say to your dad who's like, he's not good for you, you know? And I think that it's like this idea that the fans are this weird authority figure in her life that she's rebelling against. Like, I think that that is really fascinating and interesting. And like, I would love to hear her talk about that more in next album. Obviously, like, you know, that relationship with Maddie was so scrutinized. Like, this relationship with Travis is now weirdly being put on a pedestal. I would love to hear her take on that.
It's so weird. Again, we've lost the ability to act normal as a society. Yeah.
I think that like the fun that she's having, like poking fun at the fans in the song, saying like, I'm having his baby. No, I'm not, but you should have seen your faces. Like, she's like a little mischievous.
And it is mischievous. I just think it's weird because generally pregnancy is like not something to joke about, and then she is mad that they're speculating, but then she's saying, ha, I'm having some baby. No, I'm not. Ha ha, look at your face. Like, which is it, girl? What do you want?
Sure. Should we talk about the Peter losing Wendy thing?
Can we talk about one more thing first?
Oh, yeah, of course. Sorry.
There's also, like, I don't want to talk about it, but, like, there's a lot of, like, suicide mentions in this album, and it's like, oh, that's concerning. So I hope she has good people around her. But basically, like, we've already talked a lot about the Maddie Healy of it all. Mm-hmm. But this is one thing. I tweeted it, but I haven't seen anyone else, like, express the specific thought. Is Maddie Healy the getaway car? Like, it's like I needed to leave. I wanted to leave him. I needed a reason. Are you surprised I left you? Well, think about where you met me. Like, I just feel like Maddie might have been her getaway car from many relationships since 2014. They first got together in 2014, and it does look like from blind items they dated at the time, but then maybe they knew each other before that and we just don't know about it. And it was like back and forth. I think he's the getaway car.
I have always assumed that the getaway car was like the Tom Hiddleston of it all, because it was like short-lived. But you're right. It recontextualizes so much. I have no idea. I would love to know, but I think that it's going to be a great mystery.
Like, it even could have been like maybe Tom Hiddleston was actually the getaway car for Maddie Healy, who she maybe saw on April 29th when she was dating Calvin Harris. Like, I don't know.
Exactly. I have no idea.
It just is wild to me.
Yeah. I think so much of this, like the understanding, like there's a lyric in this album about like his scarlet maroon or something where it's clearly about Maddie. And I'm like, oh my God, maroon is about Maddie. Like, there's just so much that I feel like was missing from the timeline. Like, there was always this like mystery love that she was writing about. And I feel like now we know.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing too. It's like, this changes a lot. This changes a lot of the theories. It doesn't change all of them for me, but it's involved for sure. It's crazy.
Yeah. I'm down to come with you on the ride that Maddie's the getaway car. I'm okay with that. You know, like I feel comfortable saying that could be the case.
It could be. I'm not going to say definitely, but there's also in Down Bad, there's the lyric, how dare you think it's romantic leaving me safe and stranded, when in New Romantics from 1989, she says, please take my hand and please take me dancing. Please leave me stranded. It's so romantic. But we don't have any evidence that they knew each other before 1989 came out. So, like, I don't think you could say both things are about Maddie, but it's definitely possible that she would use her earlier lyrics to be like, look, I've grown and matured. I actually don't think that's romantic anymore.
And I also think that with Taylor, honestly, like, it's not always cut and dry about one person or one experience. Like, she's an artist. She writes about many things. Like, there are clearly songs on here that are like mostly about one experience she's had. And like, maybe she thinks like a scenario in it is cool to like add to that. Like I said, this album really does feel like I read her diary. Like, I believe that it's mostly autobiographical, but of course there's going to be stuff that's, you know, tongue in cheek or turn of phrase or, you know, anyways.
100%. Like, it's just like, she is a poet. You can't expect that. Like, I feel like some people are taking each song so literally.
Yeah.
And then some people are taking each song so out of context. And I'm like, there has to be a middle ground here where like some things are what they are and some things are illusions. And like, let's just analyze it together and have fun kind of vibe.
Exactly.
And then there's also that, like going from Are You Ready For It to Fresh Out the Slammer. Because in Are You Ready For It, she says, he can be my jailer, Burton to this Taylor, which is, of course, a reference to Elizabeth Taylor, her great love. And then now, she's out. She's fresh out the slammer, and her first call is going to be Maddie Healy. Crazy. That's crazy. Okay, let's talk about Cardigan and Peter.
So, we all remember where we were when Taylor was on that Eras Tour stage singing Cardigan and mouthed, this song is about you. You know who you are. I love you. The same phrase that Maddie mouthed to one of his songs. Again, see, I don't even know like what song.
I can't even remember what song it was, but it all happened around the same time, right before this was at her Nashville Eras Tour, when he had literally been in the Philippines and then Mr. Climate Activist climbed on a private jet to go see her show the very next day.
So he, like, she's, you know, saying out loud basically to everybody. That's when everybody was like, can it be? Like, is it true? And I was like, obviously it's true. You know, if she's doing that. Like, and also her doing that is the most tailor-coded thing ever. I think that during this time, like, there were a lot of new Swifties that came in sort of during the Folklore Evermore era. And they don't understand, you know, like they didn't understand the way that she is, you know, like she is wifey. She is hopeless romantic. She is grand gestures. Like her getting up around that stage is the least, and doing that is the least surprising thing to me ever. But the point is, people pointed out that in the song Cardigan, she says, Peter losing Wendy. Mm-hmm. And she has a song on the album called Peter that she sings about Peter and Wendy that's very clearly about Maddie.
And it talks about like, oh, you were in your Lost Boys. Like, I can't remember the specific lyric, but it talks about like being with your Lost Boys. There's a specific lyric that said, you said you'd come get me, but you were 25, and Maddie Healy was 25 in fall of 2014 when the first photos of Taylor wearing a 1975 shirt and Maddie wearing a 1989 Taylor Swift shirt were posted. And then the lyric in the song says, you said you were going to grow up and then you were going to come find me. And it's like, well, he's grown now and they seem to find each other.
The Cardigan of it all, like very clearly being about him or having allusions to him in it, like blew my freaking mind, Kirsten. I was like,
but here's my thing though, because, and this is my headcanon, and I'm sure other people have theorized similar things, but I just haven't seen it. So I'm not trying to like take credit or anything, but like when Folklore and Evermore came out in 2020, 2021, right? Taylor starts saying, oh, this time a lot of my songs are about fictional stories, or they're not about me, or they're like, I'm imagining other things, blah, 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 blah. And so people are like, okay, well, a lot of this is grounded in, you know, fiction, in folklore. So we can't read into it as much. I think when Folklore and Evermore came out, Taylor and Joe were in a good spot in their relationship. And so she's not going to say, oh, these are based on my weird love triangle experience between Maddie Healy and Joe Allman. I think that like Betty and all of them is like Maddie and Joe, and she maybe flipped the genders around. Like, I don't know.
Wow.
It's just like there's just so much more that we can think about, right? Now that these have been contextualized, is like, no, some of this is definitely based on her love life. And I'm getting the impression Maddie Healy and Taylor Swift, kind of when they were single, they were together. And when they were in relationships, they were apart. Mm-hmm. And they have always had this thread connecting them for 10 years.
Yeah.
And I think Taylor, in her heart of hearts, maybe thought Maddie was like her person. And then she's going to end up
clearly
with. And then
clearly,
it didn't work out that way.
The albums basically says that, like, and I think that that is part of it too, is like I wish perhaps that there had been more time taken with the crafting of this album and getting it out, because I think that the understanding that she probably eventually will come to of that I thought that he was going to be my answer to this really long heartbreak. Like, I thought that like that was worth it because of this person. And then this person ended up hurting me more. Like, I would love songs about like that reflection, you know, versus like seven songs about the pain of your situationship not working out. You know what
but
I mean?
I also think it rings so genuine to me to be like lingering on the situationship that screwed you over.
Yeah.
Because that's like, as you said, and as we said before, but like Joe and Taylor, 6-year relationship, that's complicated. There's so much to discuss there. They definitely both did good and bad things in that relationship. And it doesn't seem like there's one bad guy in the relationship, right? Versus, okay, well, this situationship lasted for like a month and a half, and I was obsessed that you were my soulmate and you weren't, and you treated me kind of badly, and I'm mad at you for doing it, but also mad at myself for allowing it to happen. And that's just, it's just so much more cut and dry. I think a lot of people can relate to that. Like, I just think it is very genuine that that's how people might feel. To the point where I'm like, I think LOML, love of my life versus loss of my life, it could be about Maddie, not Joe.
I think it probably is.
Which is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be.
But
it gives
not always as they could be.
Maddie like love bombed her and was talking about having a baby and getting married, even though they were just starting to get together. Like, that's the vibe. Obviously, sometimes, I'm not there. I'm not in the relationship, but that's what it seems like.
Yeah. And you know, like, sometimes, I mean, she says in her voice note about Down Bad, like, she says, like, you get love bombed by someone. It's like you've been abducted by aliens. Like, she literally uses the term love bombed, I think. So, like, I believe she feels that way as well. But
just
like,
absolutely brutal.
Yeah. I mean, ridiculously brutal. And like, what she went through there, I think, because like all of her hopes and dreams were kind of pinned on him.
Yeah.
And I think like that clearly just like, I mean, we got the album. It's all there, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Having a song called Clara Bow is very interesting because Clara Bow had a lot of lesbian associates, and there's a lot of bisexual rumors about Clara Bow, who was not able to be out based on the time that she was alive. And obviously, we've discussed it to death on this podcast. There's a lot of theories about Taylor Swift possibly being queer by some other identity versus simply straight. I do think a lot of songs on this album are like so straight, it's like almost annoying, but like there's still some stuff for the bilers in here.
Yeah, I mean, I said what I thought. Yeah,
you don't agree with the theory, and that's fine.
Like, I don't.
For me, I have to believe it, because if she did all that shit during Lover about gay pride is what makes me and put herself in the center of a gay pride parade, and she's not queer, she's just like literally the devil. And so I like her. So I have to believe that she's bi for that reason. And I do believe that since she did all that, she kind of opened the door for people speculating on it. So that's my opinion. I know not everyone agrees with that. It's fine. We don't have to discuss it. I just thought it was interesting that she named the song Clara Bow, who is like not really a reference a lot of people are going to get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I haven't listened to that one as many times. Like, I think I only listened to that one twice, and I've seen a lot of discussion about it online, and I need to go back and
listen. I like the song, but I find it very unsettling when she says her own name towards the end of the song, where she says, like, you look like Taylor Swift in this light. We're loving it. You've got edge. She never did. I'm like, I like when they say the name of the movie in the movie, but I didn't like when Taylor Swift said her own name in the song. It was just unsettling. Okay, not I didn't like it. It was just unsettling to
sure,
me.
Sure, of course. I don't know. I think that it's really, though, like, she's written so much about how she's, like, worried that her star is going to dim and, you know, all of these things. Like, it's something that she's genuinely scared of. And I think that it's a really interesting way to express that emotion, you know? Like, I think that that songwriting is very clever. And
yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is. But then you look at, she wrote The Lucky One, which is all about escaping from it all. And it's like, I don't know. I guess maybe she thought she wanted to escape, and then when she was out of the public eye and then all of that, it was not the same. She also was largely out of the public eye during COVID when we were all locked in our home. So it's not like a normal experience of life. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. And she was out of the public eye because like she felt she had been forced into hiding. And I think, you know, I think that there's her feelings on that. I would love to hear her talk a little bit more about that. Like, that's what I thought Fresh Out the Slammer was going to be about. Like, I thought that she was going to talk more about like her mixed feelings about hiding away. And, you know, like, I would love to hear like through her art more expression of that.
Yes. But instead it was like, I'm out of jail and I'm going to go have sex with Maddie Healy now because nothing is stopping me. I was like, oh, that's not what I thought this would be, but okay.
Yeah.
There's also a song called Thank You, Amy, where the K, I, and M are capitalized to indicate Kim. The song mentions a spray-tanned statue to indicate Kim Kardashian. And I'm just like, I like the song. Like, the song is fine. I think it's going to be really funny when Northwest is, like, singing it to Kim Kardashian because she's, like, a mean child, which, like, we're all mean children at that age. But I'm like, are we really still doing this? Her mom wished Kim was dead.
Yeah, I mean, she's still mad.
I guess if I had a daughter and she was leaving her house in a suitcase for a year, I'd be mad at the person who started that.
Oh, too. My mom would have said worse stuff.
Yeah. You're listen, my mom might have killed her herself. So yeah. I can't say anything about that. Some other news. The Black Dog is a pub and the owner went on TV either yesterday or today and literally confirmed that Joe Alwyn goes there. And now today the bar is like so mobbed with Swifties, it can't operate normally.
Oh. Fun.
Which is like, I think the nice thing to do would have been to choose the name of a pub that is not real or like make up a pub. But I think maybe, listen, Taylor said, I can never give you peace. And I think she was doing that to a place Joe Alwyn loved so he couldn't go back.
I still kind of think that song might be about Maddie Healy. She says her rain-soaked body was shaking and, like, he was at her rain show in Boston. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I think that, like – and also, she like, timing-wise, like, though, I don't know. It doesn't really mess up.
And it rains.
Yeah, I don't know.
We don't know, but people think it might be about Joe. All it said to me was that Joe likes the band The Starting Line, which means he's an elder emo like myself. It's the first time I've ever felt anything but neutrality towards Joe Alwyn.
The reason also that I was like, I thought this was about Maddie, like there's apparently like a cover of him doing it online, like the 1975 doing a cover of The Starting Line.
That could be a reference for, it could be about both of them, right? We don't know.
Yeah.
But like a band like the 1975 covering a Starting Line song is like the most expected thing I could possibly imagine. I can't think of anything else that I would expect more than that. But they might both like the start. Maybe she has a type. Maybe she likes The Starting Line and she gets everyone into it. I don't know. What did you think about people getting up in arms about I'm Gonna Get You Back versus Get Him Back by Olivia Rodrigo this weekend? Did you see it?
Yeah, I think that that's ridiculous. They're completely different songs. They're sonically different. The vibe is completely different.
The thing is, and I agree, I don't think that they're anything alike. And I think Olivia did it better because I think it's more of like a vibe for a young person being petty than like a grown woman to have. But I can see the upset because of on Olivia's first album with Deja Vu, when she was forced to give Taylor writing credits and presumably a bunch of money because of the scream yelling during the chorus sounding like Cruel Summer. I have never once listened to Deja Vu and thought about Cruel Summer. Like, I don't think it sounds sonically alike
I am going to push back on you. She did not have to give Taylor songwriting credit for that. Apparently, they just did. Hayley Williams pushed about what's it called? The Good For You. So they gave songwriting credit to Hayley Williams on that. They had already given Taylor songwriting credit for New Year's Day because they interpolated it. And Jack did an interview where he said like that it was really unexpected. He had no idea. Just like one day his lawyer got the email that they were giving him and Taylor and then the other person who wrote that with him songwriting credit for Cruel Summer. So I personally don't, I'm going to push back on you saying she was forced to do that. Maybe she felt like she was by the people in charge, but I don't think that there was like, there's clearly something that went on there, but I'm not ready to say like it was, she was bullied by Taylor.
Well, I didn't say she was bullied, but like something definitely happened where 2 years ago, Olivia Rodrigo's doing like a song association video, and every single song she lists is Taylor Swift. And now she does not talk about Taylor Swift whatsoever when she used to be like a huge Swiftie. So like, I think more happened behind the scenes, and maybe, I don't know. I don't think Taylor wants to be perceived as a bad guy. So I don't think we'll ever know the full extent. And like, maybe Taylor isn't a bad guy. Maybe nothing happened. But like, it's weird when someone goes from being literally like the biggest fan of your music to you bringing on a rising star, but like that person's nemesis at one time to open a huge leg of your tour as well. Like, it's interesting with the Sabrina Carpenter of it all.
I don't know.
But listen, we don't have to get into conspiracies. It's fine. The funniest thing I've seen since the album came out was Taylor Swift liked an Instagram post that she liked this post. I couldn't find the screenshot. I have it bookmarked on Twitter somewhere, but like, it literally shows Taylor Swift liked this post. It was a bunch of memes.
Was it real?
I'm pretty sure it was real, but it could have been fake. I my media literacy is at an all-time low, so take this with a grain of salt. But there's a post that was on Instagram, and it was the like Abby Miller Dance Moms like pyramid meme.
It's hysterical if she liked it.
And it's all of Taylor's exes. So the bottom row says Calvin Harris, Joe Alwyn, Jake Gyllenhaal, Maddie Healy. The middle row says Taylor Lautner, Tom Hiddleston, Harry Styles. And the top says Travis Kelce. And allegedly Taylor liked the post.
Oh my God. That is, if she did actually do that, she is truly letting chaos reign supreme.
Yes,
right now.
She is. Oh, she 100% is.
That is crazy.
Yeah, she might not have actually liked it. You're right. My media literacy is not always the best. It's also like sometimes with stuff like this, I just want to believe it so bad that I'm just like, I don't care if it's fake. To me, it's real. It was rare. Yeah. I was there. I remember it all too well.
Yes. And you know, like there, like I said, there's some stuff like you being like something went on between Olivia Rodrigo and Taylor. I'm like, la, 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 la. No, no, no. You know, I'm like, I'm not ready. I'm not ready to hear that. I'm not.
I don't think she's like threatened to kill her or anything.
I have my parasocial relationship with Taylor. Let me have it.
I would never try to take it away from you. I would never. Yeah. Also, articles have been coming out that like, because Taylor's been doing a lot of pap walks again, very 1989 era. Uh-huh. And a lot of these photos, you will see references to her song titles. In October, we saw her wearing a claw clip from Anthropology. The clip was part of a 3-piece set called the Amy Claw Clip Hair Set. Amy spelled the same way it is in the song title. The following month, there's a photo of her with Gracie Abrams in New York, and she's wearing a green YSL bag, which is called the Cassandra bag. In January, she was wearing black boots by The Row, which are called the Robin Leather Chelsea Boots, which there's a song called Robin.
Wow. It's
like,
if that's true. Like, she's.
The one thing, like, I do fully believe that that was on purpose, because the only thing, like, she very specifically has said she hides Easter eggs in clothing, right? And so I do think that that's on purpose.
Taylor, wow. I am like, I didn't know. Like I said, I am huge Swiftie. I didn't know that.
I think I just started seeing these articles today. So I think more will probably come out too.
Yeah. I also think like all of these Easter eggs, like I said, I feel like I'm like top level Swiftie. Like I remember stuff. Like I remember the Dumois timeline pretty clearly. And I don't remember, like I remember it a little differently than the way you described it, Kirsten, but like, mostly because I listened to Dumois' podcast too. Sorry.
Could never be me.
No, I could never be like anyone I've ever talked to.
I know people who listen. I know someone who pays the subscriber fee to see her subscriber only post. So don't feel bad. Don't feel bad about listening to the podcast.
But like, I feel like I know everything that's going on, like that I need to. Like, I feel like I know lyrics, I know storytelling, I know like all, but like the Easter eggs, it just is overwhelming sometimes.
It's too much. It's simply too much. It's like, and she changed her nail polish on this finger to orange at this point of the tour. So Karma is, the album Karma is coming out. It's real and it's coming. And I'm like, okay. Like, as long as that one guy on TikTok says it to me, I'll believe him because he just seems to know all the facts. I think I'm like one level deeper than you. Mm-hmm. Just because I'm a crazy person and I'm like, yes, get me the red thread. Like, let me tie it to all the photos.
I think that like, that's the fun of it, right? Like, it's so fun to theorize. It's like, if you like puzzles or like escape rooms, like this is totally the, you know, the fun thing. It's like a fun activity. You know, I don't blame anybody. I just think that I have never been able to really get into it because I'm not very good at puzzles. I'm very good though at, analyzing people's words and wondering what they will feel like, or, you know, so that's why I'm like super into.
It's so fun. It's just fun. Like, Sasha and I will often talk on the podcast, but like, oh, we want to bring conspiracy theories back, like fun conspiracy theories back. Cause it's like conspiracy theories used to be like a fun thing to kind of joke around about. And now you've got people out here who genuinely believe that like birds aren't real and a bunch of other like, way worse stuff and like
other people. Yeah.
It's like, well, that's not fun anymore.
No.
So it's to me, the Swiftie like Easter eggs is like the type of conspiracy theory you can engage with without like inevitably going down like that woman who made like the pipeline of how evil conspiracy theories get. It's like the Swiftie ones I don't think are on that pipeline. So I think it's fine.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
Do you have any other thoughts about the album or anything that you want to get out there before we close the pod?
I think the only thing that I really want to say is like, in case you couldn't tell by this podcast, I really love her. I'm very proud of her for doing this. She's very meaningful to me. And like the girls that get it and the girls that don't. And I'm not going to, you know, like come for any of the people who don't. But like, Taylor Swift as an artist is very meaningful to me personally. So thank you for letting me come on and talk about this. And I'm really excited to listen to the album more, have it grow on me. You know, I think that my, like I said, she's very meaningful to me, but I do have like, hopefully, I mean, this is an hour and 15 minutes of me being incredibly parasocial, but also like a more healthy artistic view of it, of her work and what she produces, because I think that with appreciating an artist's triumphs, like nobody can exclusively produce triumphs, you know?
Yes.
And just because it's not a triumph doesn't mean that it's not incredibly meaningful work and important in many different ways, and maybe for her personally. And, you know, as a fan, I feel like this makes me feel closer to her.
She probably didn't want that. She probably didn't want us to feel closer to her in this way. Well, but yet, here we are.
No, I mean, I think that like her feeling like she wanted to say even the things that she said and like, you know, but daddy, I love him. I think that she was more willing to be more raw than she's ever been willing to be, even like beyond just being like, I'm so sad and being like, yeah. And sometimes you guys really cross the line and it sucks and you drive people away from me. And I feel like I don't need any help with that. You know, like
very true.
I think that like her saying things that she maybe lyrically did not feel comfortable to say or danced around more is an exciting part of the album.
Yes. And the last thing I'm going to say, because I just remembered this drove me a little bit up the wall when I was listening. So there's a lyric in But Daddy, I Love Him about like the wine moms waiting. Uh-huh. And I'm just like, girl, wine moms are your age now. Like, she's acting like wine moms are like 30 years older than her. I'm like, you are a woman in your early to mid 30s. There are a lot of wine moms that are in your demographic. And so it's weird to talk about them as if they're not your peers.
Yeah. And I think though, like that song. Oh, I'm like, we need to have I need to listen to it more and have more of a postmortem on it, because I'm like, I do also think that song was very clearly written during a snapshot of time. When she was like, I can fix him, screw you, you don't even know, you're making him scared of me, stop doing that, you know? And like,
yeah. Oh, there was even a thing where like one of his shows shortly after they split where he like spray painted sorry on something during the show. And people are like, oh my God, he was apologizing to her.
Okay. He probably was.
He literally eats raw steak on stage during his performance. I don't know that we need to read into everything, every little thing he does.
Yeah, but he probably was, given like everything that we now know.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, maybe
he was.
I don't think he's really sorry about it, but that's just me. Yeah. That's just my attitude. It's fine. Mm-hmm. Okay, sorry. I think I spoke over you there. Was there something else you were saying about that?
No, just thanks for letting me come on and talk about it. I love Taylor and I am so grateful that she continues to produce music for us to consume and enjoy. And yeah.
Yes. Do you have time for a short anonymous?
Yes, of course.
Okay. I felt like this one was very Tortured Poets Department coded. Okay.
Okay.
So our messenger says, when my brother was in his freshman year of high school, I found quite a few rough drafts of a letter that he was trying to write. He kept messing it up. He was using pen. So we had to keep like throwing them away.
Mm-hmm.
They don't still have a picture of the letter. So they're paraphrasing here. But at one point, that means they did have a photo of the letter, which I love. That's just like peak older sibling behavior. Mm-hmm. And it was a love letter. Basically saying that this girl that he was writing to, like, oh, she makes him better because he uses less swear words when he's around her.
Aww.
But like she was his second choice. And also that he only carries a pocket knife for protection. He's not a Russian terrorist. This boy was adopted from Russia. So it must have been like a joke that, oh, he's a Russian terrorist, which is like not cool.
That's giving middle school.
Exactly. Like grade 9. I see it. It all adds up to me. Mm-hmm. And our messenger and her mom still joke about this letter to this day, which is like, your poor brother.
Leave him alone.
Let him live.
Oh my God. Leave your siblings' emotional love life feelings alone. Oh,
but God. It is so funny.
That is really good. And I'm glad you did pick that one because that is very Tortured Poets. He probably wrote it on his typewriter.
Who uses a typewriter?
No, like literally.
I saw a picture of Maddie Healy with a duffel bag and someone was like, the typewriter's in there. I just
know. Yeah, and maybe that's also like part of the block that I have with some of it because she's like, this guy was so cool. He did this and this and this. And it's like listing everything that is deeply cringe to me about like a man.
But it's the thing where it's like, she's also like, wow, you were in your Jehovah's Witness suit. Who is that guy? It's like, dead. He's already dead.
Yeah. I mean, no, she's mad the second half. Like she's mad.
And I love feminine rage. So I love it. But I also like the first half too. A lot of people were not loving Jack Antonoff's like synths. They're like, wow, it's a lot of memes of like Taylor being like, I want to kill myself. And then it'll be like Jack. And then it's like someone on like a... Mm-hmm. Like one of the boards, like, I don't care. I like it. I like Jack Antonoff. I loved Fun, which was his second band, not his first band. And so I've been a Jack Antonoff fan much longer than I've been a Taylor Swift fan. So I just simply can't relate to that.
Oh, no, I love Jack. And, you know, I had the moment that I think a lot of people had on this album where they were like, she should just take a break from Jack and collaborate with someone else. I had that moment when I heard the 1989 Volt tracks. But then silly me, like I said, it's all I listen to. Like that's why I'm like, oh God, Maggie, your opinion now is going to change so much. You know, like I literally, when the 1989 Volt tracks came out, I was like, screw this. This is so stupid. I'm just going to, I might as well just listen to Melodrama. If I, you know, like this is like nothing, whatever. And then like I said, Is It Over Now is definitely my number one listen to probably of the whole year.
So. I haven't listened to Is It Over Now in a minute. I've been trying to branch out and listen to a little less Taylor Swift because my day lists on Spotify were like 95% Taylor Swift songs. And I was like, I would like for these lists to be an opportunity for me to find new music. So I'm going to like I've been going out of my way to listen to other things as well that I really love. And like, I've gone a lot more into Renee Rapp and Sabrina Carpenter. I've been listening to a lot of Hozier, Chapel Roan, obviously.
Chapel, my girl.
I told y'all last week, she's still mostly just on the gay people Spotify list, but like she's about to be everywhere. So you're, this is like the last moment where you can claim to be H-M-T-T.
No, I remember in the fall, like, so her album came out in August and it was, I want to say like October. And I would listen to it on the train and I was like, it's 2 p.m. and I'm going to pick up a child from school. Like, I can't be sitting here like, get it hot like Papa John. Like, it, I was like, it's too okay for the train at this hour. Like, it's too, I'm too hot to
Maggie, go. Last week, one day I was driving to a 7 a.m. spin class, just like, get it hot.
Oh my God. No, I love such a vibe. Her.
But yeah, so it's basically her. Like, this is like the pinnacle of the last moment, I think, that people can get into Chapel Roan and be like, you were a semi early adopter. Mm-hmm. So like, get in before the bandwagon is gone, because like we're all headed. It's fine.
No,
I think that is enough for this episode of Mess Magnets. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for joining me, Maggie. Thank it was so great me. To have another Swiftie to break all this down with. Can you let the listeners know where else they can find you if they are so inclined?
Yes, you can find me on TikTok and Instagram at @MLMorgan_. I'm there. If you also love Taylor, send a little message. I think that's mostly what I've got going on right now. I've popped in and out of BB Can a little bit, but trying to watch when I can. But, you know, it's without feeds, it's tough to – yeah. But yes, that's what I've been up to.
Amazing. And if you would like to hear more from me, you can follow me everywhere at Kirsten Said What. You can also listen coming soon. There will be an episode on the Hot Dummies on Islands feed of Jenny Autumn and myself breaking down the first couple episodes of Lovers and Liars, which is the F-Boy Island spinoff. Should just be F-Girl Island, but I guess they're not calling it that. So that's super fun. And if you like romance novels, you can go over to the Ready to be Romanced podcast, where I talk to Tori about Book Lovers by Emily Henry, which is my favorite book. And you can get into that as well. Sasha will be back next week. You can follow her everywhere, funsize_04. You can also listen to the Below Deck podcast over on the Bravo TV Rahapups feed, as well as, listen, she has a lot of appearances. She's on the 90 Day last week. She's covering lots of things. Go follow Sasha and find everything there. But her and I will be back next week with more mess, celebrity gossip, and it will actually be our 100th episode. So definitely stay tuned for that. In the meantime, you can leave us a 5-star rating and review on your podcatcher of choice, which really helps people find the show. If you've already done so, maybe tell a friend about the show and they'll listen. And that would be really helpful too. And you can also submit your anonymous to tinyurl.com/messmagnets. We are low on anonymous. So please, if you've got gossip, send it in. We will see you next week. Bye.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.